Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
And we are back with you for another edition of Sports Daily, and we're glad to be here on a Thursday. It is Albrock and Caster. Max Powers producing for us as we are getting you ready to head down the home stretch of this week, get ready for the weekend. We've got contests for you, all kinds of ways to get in touch with the program. You could do it by calling us at 869-1240. You can do it by leaving us comments on our video stream. Thanks to those of you watching on 12 News Connected. Thanks to those watching on Facebook, YouTube, X. You can comment to us all those places. And you can leave voice messages through the Odyssey app. You go to the app if you're listening to us there, which is a great way to take in the program. And you click the little microphone button. You leave us a voice message. Max can get that right out over the air. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. It's a good day. It was a good evening last night. I do, though, have to admit that I remember saying, I think it was yesterday or maybe 2 days ago, that I wasn't all that excited about the Knicks and Pacers series.
You are now.
And then Tyrese Halliburton had something to say about that last night. That was quite a finish in that game.
I can't believe it got to that point. I was kind of in and out, and then I got back in right at the end there. And man, it was so perfect. The choke gesture, I was like, man, I've seen that before. I've seen that. And I'm like, oh my God, that's Reggie Miller at Madison Square Garden. Yeah. Like, it was just so, like, such a, like, a beautiful historian's take on that series. It sets into motion perfection for that series. Now we're all in, right? And Halliburton's good at that. Like, he's really good at finding those things. And the NBA, I mean, honestly, the NBA needs it. The NBA needs guys to step into that role, the quote-unquote villain role. And Reggie Miller for the Pacers was so good at it. Like, that was perfection. Now, of course, he didn't actually win the game there on that right shot. They needed to go get it done in overtime, which was fine.
The only thing I thought about after he did that and they realized that his foot was on the line and they didn't win the game was, man, the Pacers have to win this game now. Like, if they don't, like, that completely is a major blunder from Halliburton. But it's they obviously got it done in overtime and take a 1-0 lead.
And they were down big and they came back. So it'll be interesting to watch that series now. It seems destined to go long, right? It seems destined to go into 6 or 7 games one way or the other. So I'm happy for it. I'm happy for that kind of drama. I'm happy for those kinds of moments in the postseason because that's what we remember, right? Like, those are the things that stick with us as we make our way through history. And the Pacers are right there. And they'll obviously now definitely have a shot in the series. But the Knicks are in a little bit of danger here. Pressure's on them in game 2. That was great. Royals played day baseball yesterday. And there are things there that we could look back at that game in San Francisco and be like, okay, like, here we go. And we'll get into that as we make our way through it today. But a lot we can look at on a small scale in baseball. And if you could just get a little bit of that to carry through, the Royals are going to be in real good shape, but you got to get to carry through. And they're getting ready with a day off today to head to just a massive early season series against Minnesota. So we'll have that for you as well. Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider, is going to stop by. Good timing for Fitz because we have the news of this potential college athletics CEO that's been floated out there. And K-State gets a basketball recruit that we're excited for a lot of reasons. And we'll explain why that might be a little bit later as well. Shocker baseball is done. Their season is finished. What turns out to be, honestly, one of the worst seasons in program history is finally done. And they'll be ready, I'm sure, to turn the page off of this year. I believe it's second most losses in program history on a season they were projected to win or finish second in the league. That's a tough pill to swallow. And so they'll move on to the next one. All kinds of stuff there for you. We're going to give some stuff away. We'll give away some HTO later in the show. So stay tuned for your opportunity to win that. Thank you to Prairie Fire Coffee in the meantime, for getting us the cafe. Every time I'm like, you know what? I'm going to bed early tonight. We get Knicks Pacers down to the wire. We get Royals late baseball in San Francisco. So we appreciate Prairie Fire for getting it to us. Jim Irsay died, Tommy. Did you see that yesterday?
I did. Yeah, no, I did. 65 years old. He was one of the more entertaining characters in the NFL as far as ownership is concerned. Usually pretty outspoken, You know, he was usually front and center, kind of along the same lines of Jerry Jones and Al Davis, you know, before he passed away back in the day, and definitely a very colorful character. So, you know, sad news, especially right as, you know, the NFL is doing its owners meetings and, you know, all of that. The owner of the Colts passes away. You buried the lead, though, out of everything that's been going on. The tush push remains in the NFL. You didn't even bring that up to this point.
No, I did mean to bring it up. It'll be where we start.
That's the big thing. I mean, that's the big news, that the tush push ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, it's not. And yesterday, we made our stances on it. I would have liked to seen it go. Tommy wanted it to stay, and we kind of settled on it's about a 50-50 chance that the decision will go. If you read about the drama with it, it's pretty wild how it all appeared to have played out. And Jason Kelce, perhaps, in some observers' minds, might have been the guy who pushed it just over the finish line. They were only two votes shy. And it was something. We're going to get into that next segment because we'll have a little more time. We need to discuss it a little further. Let's take this time, though, on Irsay. You know, NFL owners were at those meetings. He was active, like tweeting earlier in the day. I don't know what happened, but it's certainly sudden. And NFL owners, more, I think, than any other owners, become characters of the league. Yet another thing I think that the league does really well is allow, and I don't even know that they do it on purpose. Maybe it just happens to be these personalities. But we know far more collectively, Tommy, as a society about NFL owners than we do any other sport. Like in baseball, you might know the owner of your own team that you watch, and then that you don't really know or care about anybody else. Same with basketball. But in the NFL, we kind of know all of them. And Jim Irsay was at the forefront of the ones that really can make a headline. And he kind of took his style and he wore it on his chest. And sometimes that rubbed people the wrong way. And, you know, I think if you're a Colts fan, you appreciate the product on the field he was able to produce. However much of that was, you know, Peyton Manning. I think the great achievement were the Manning years. I think the great failure were the Andrew Luck years and the refusal to get Luck protection and the help that he needed. But it was certainly always impactful for a franchise maybe they wouldn't be there in Indianapolis otherwise. But man, the Colts have always been interesting with Jim Irsay.
Yeah, they have. And I wonder what, you know, the future looks like with this team moving forward. I mean, it's been under the control of the Irsay family for a long time, you know, going all the way back to Jim Irsay's father. And, you know, what does that look like for the future of the franchise long term? And, you know, I would imagine that, you know, it goes into, I would think, a trust or a family estate or whatever that is. I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't really know Jim Irsay's family, if there's like a next generation or if he's got relatives that will run it. I think that's probably all up in the air at this point. You know, so I look long term at this franchise and what does the stability look like without the guy that's ran the team for the last almost 30 years.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But it's a, you know, it's a seismic shift in, you know, in the NFL. There's only 32 of these individuals that do this, and it's a big deal, when especially unexpected, and it's obviously very sad anytime anybody dies, honestly, in my opinion. So that happened yesterday. So did the tush push news. Those are big NFL headlines. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get into the tush push now. We discussed the play itself and why we thought the league should do one thing or the other. They made their decision. We'll talk about it next. You can chime in on the video streams. You can call us all kinds of different ways. We're coming back with more Sports Daily. Don't go away.
time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. I want to tell you about the Odyssey Summer Concert Series. We have events for you here. This will be 8 total weeks, 4 in Andover at the Capitol Federal Amphitheater, 4 in Wichita at the Nafsker Park. They start June 20th. They are Friday nights from 8 to 10 o'clock, and they are free live music. Odyssey Summer Concert Series. Look for the details of that over the coming weeks and set your calendar to it. Go out and get some free live music at a couple of great venues. Welcome back into Sports Daily. Tush Push stays, and it was as close as we thought it would be. I mean, I don't know that it was 50-50, but it was only 2 votes shy. It could not have been much closer yesterday to being gone, and it is here, and the Eagles are very appropriately, and Eagles fans are doing a nice job of rubbing that in to the rest of the league. I think that probably all parties need to be commended here. I've told you yesterday, I think it should be gone because I think it's a boring play that takes away from the excitement of the game. I think that owners, when I read some of the comments after the game, like, they were pretty good. Even Jerry Jones, he's like, I have to sit here and weigh, like, do I want to put the Eagles at a disadvantage or do I actually think this is an unsafe play? I never thought the unsafe play was the right play, by the way. Because as we watch it, we're like, why are they saying that's an unsafe play? Like, I don't recall, knock on wood, anybody ever getting hurt during that play. Like, it's like the least high intensity contact that there is. And so, you know, it's interesting. I think had they not used that strategy, they probably would have had a better chance. But when you're trying to sell it to owners, like, oh, this isn't a safe play, and I don't think there are any doctors or anybody else actually saying that. And then Jason Kelce gets up there and it's like, I could have played forever, you know, if we just ran that play every time. So I thought it was a really interesting process to get there. I don't know if this tables the vote just for one season. I have no idea, but it's here and it's here to stay. So you're not going to stop it. If you're the opposition, you better just learn how to do it yourself. And that's the slippery slope I've been afraid of. I think every team will learn how to do this well, and it will make games more boring. That's what I don't like. But that's what's going to happen.
We had the conversation on Tuesday with our buddy Felix Johnson about the Chiefs and about how, you know, they've kind of been the villain for a number of years in the NFL with their dynasty. And maybe that's starting to turn a corner a little bit. And I think that with the way that the Eagles put together this entire presentation about the Tush Push yesterday, that kind of solidifies them as the new villains in the NFL. I mean, and I don't know if you followed like or read about Jeffrey Lurie, the owner of the Eagles, and his impassioned presentation about not banning the Tush Push. He talked for like an hour about it at the meetings, to the point to where I believe it was the owner of the 49ers asked him like how much longer he had to go, because he was like talking forever about it. Like, and tempers got heated, and you know, the drama was kicked up a notch a little bit. And then of course you bring in Jason Kelce, and he becomes kind of the voice of the players, basically saying that he really feels like it needed to stay and stick around. And I think that it did sound like some of the owners, you know, resonated with what Jason Kelce was saying at the presentation. Like, the Eagles did a pretty masterful job of really, you know, giving their case out to the other owners and basically showing why they don't want it to be banned. But at the same time, they did it in a way to where you can look back on it and be like, yeah, they want to be the bad guys in the league a little bit, and they were persuasive enough where they were able to get just enough teams to vote against it, and it remains for another year.
And here we are. I do think – now, have you seen – I have not seen. Like, is it just tabled for a year? Can it be brought back up? Does this solidify it for a little while? I don't know that part of it.
I think it would take another team – next year before owners meetings to put another proposal together.
Yeah. And they're not going to be able to, I don't know. I don't know what the likelihood, but again, and this is my point with it and why I hoped it would be gone. If it's not going to be gone, everybody's going to learn how to use it, because the Eagles are successful with it 90% of the time. That means in 90% of down and two or less to go, they're converting that. It's, I mean, it's an unbelievable strategic advantage. Teams will get better at it.
Yeah, but and teams might get better at it, but also it's not just the play itself. It's the personnel. And the Eagles have the right combination of personnel to be able to make it happen. It's not, I mean, Jalen Hurts is phenomenal at it, but it's also their offensive line is huge. Like they're one of, if not the largest offensive lines in the entire league. And so it's not just a, hey, let's get better at it so we can do it at 90%. You've got to have the personnel too, and not every team has that.
Well, but and maybe it becomes 80%, but it'll be a higher percentage because you're going. What I think will happen, and what I think, what's why I've said for like why the Chiefs did not use Blake Bell. That all, it's not about like finding the quarterback to do it to me. It's about who can take a snap. Like what fullback do you have? What tight end do you have that can take a snap? And then they'll just do the play instead. Hurts happens to be good at it. Not every quarterback is. I can't imagine.
But don't you think if teams had
back there doing tush pushes?
Don't you think if teams had that personnel, they would have already implemented this? I mean, this is not a new thing.
No,
like this is. I mean, teams have been able to do this forever.
It takes the league a little time to adapt and adjust. Think about when Tampa beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl and how they played them defensively. It took a while for the rest of the league to start doing that. Right. Like it took it because and we saw it, but it was not the next year. It was like the year after that year. That's when we started seeing every team take away the long ball. The league is, it does that, right? All these coaches change and it gets cyclical. Eventually they're going to be watching that and be like, why aren't we doing this? And so they'll get better at it, and they will and so when that happens, my fear and why I wish the play was gone, it's like, well, if everybody does it and everybody's doing it well, we have now eliminated short yardage situations from being an exciting play in the game. It becomes a foregone conclusion that it'll be a conversion. And as a viewer, that's not nearly as fun. The product isn't nearly as fun seeing that play. The tush push is a boring play. Like, you know, it's worse than an extra point almost at this point. You're just like, yeah, whatever. You just kind of don't pay a whole lot of attention to it because you know it's coming. So look, maybe that doesn't happen. That's just a guess from me, but I think it will. And I don't like it because I think the play sucks. It's a boring play. I don't like the play.
You know, Aaron Glenn, the new head coach for the Jets, this was, you know, a couple months ago, he had a quote, and I actually love this mentality. And I feel like all the teams, all the opponents in the NFL, you know, of the Eagles should implement this sort of mentality. He said, and I quote, "They've done a good job creating a play that's unstoppable. In my defensive coaching mentality, my job is to stop that play. Our job is to stop that play." And again, like, they're not banning it. The NFL has made that clear. Like, they didn't get enough votes to ban it. So now it's up to these opponents and these coaches to figure out a way to stop it. I think that's the primary responsibility, not to copy what the Eagles are doing and implement it yourself. Because again, you may not have the right personnel to have that kind of success, that level of success that the Eagles have shown. Like, the Bills run it, but the Bills don't run it with the same level of success that the Eagles do. And so that becomes the key component for these opponents. It's to figure out a way to stop it. And that's what I've said all along. That's the solution. Stop it. If you can put some kind of defensive scheme together, and I don't know what that is. I'm not a defensive guru, but there's got to be some kind of way to, you know, have the kryptonite to Superman. That's the job of these coaches and these teams, to figure out a way to stop it.
So I agree with the mentality should be that. I don't think you can. I think we're to the point with that play now. Over what are we, 3 years into that play or 2 years into that play? You're not going to stop it. It won't be stopped. Like, the physics of it doesn't work. If it's run properly, you can't stop it. Like, that's the point of it, is it's unstoppable. And so, yeah, the priority for teams should be just stop the play. The priority for teams should also be learn how to run the play. And they will. This is the NFL. It's a copycat league. They're going to get better at it. And so all of that to the side is where I stand. Like, I get all of that, and I want my coaches and players thinking that way too. I'm just thinking about it from what's the best thing for the league to do. And that's where I fall into, they should get rid of the play. And it's not like it's unprecedented. We went through it yesterday. They change rules in this league all the time to fit what they want the product to look like. I mean, the most egregious is how much contact a wide receiver and a defensive back can make before. Are you kidding me? Like, you've taken those defensive backs and you put them at such a disadvantage. Why? Well, because you want more passing in the game because it's more exciting. And so that's for me. Like, yes, I want Steve Spagnuolo to line up this offseason. Like, how do we try to stop this play 2 out of 10 times instead of 1 out of 10 times? Because we might play that team in the Super Bowl again. And we play them in week 2 this season. I get that's obvious. That's absolutely what needs to happen. And at the same time, if every team's smart, they're going to say, how do we do that? Like, why are we we can do this. Let's figure out how to do it effectively. The Eagles obviously perfected it. We've got an offseason here. I will bet you money that we see more tush pushes from more teams next year than we've ever seen before. I'll bet you money.
You may be right about that. I don't think they're going to be as successful as what the Eagles have done.
Probably not going to be. Again, the Eagles have been doing this now for 2 or 3 years, but it will be a very, very high conversion rate. Very high. Maybe it's not 90, maybe it's 75, but it'll be there. And so it's fine. It's obviously it's here now. We'll just have to watch it. But I don't think any of us are going to sit there and love that it's happening.
I'm fine with it. What I find ludicrous about this entire thing, the rule was changed to allow players to push other players. It's been in place for 20 years. And we're just now having this conversation. Like, it's ludicrous to me. This is not a new rule change that the NFL had experimented with a couple of years ago, and this has been the result, and now they've got to go back on it. This has been in place for a long time. How are we just now dealing with this? Like, I feel like, and again, that's a testament to the Eagles and their offensive prowess for figuring out a way to work within the confines of the rules, what the rules of the game state, to do something that works really well for them. It is a copycat league, but that doesn't mean the success will be replicated from other teams.
It'll take time.
It's going to, but again, it's also personnel based. Not every team has a Jalen Hurts. So you might have a team that is able to run it at a 70% success rate or whatever it is, but you're not going to, not every team has that kind of personnel to be able to execute it highest of levels that the Eagles have been able to execute.
So it'll take time to get there. I just, like, my prediction is they'll find other players to do it besides, again, you're not going to do it with Matt Stafford, right? You'll find a player on your roster. You'll train a tight end how to take a snap properly. Like, that's where, and it'll take time. I think you'll see the attempts and more teams doing it this year. And then I think probably in another year, you'll see a success rate get up there pretty close to where the Eagles are. The only thing that's going to change any of this, by the way, is if there are actual player injuries because of it. That hasn't happened that I know of so far. I don't think that the doctors are backing that up. I think that's just sort of what people make up and say because, hey, player safety, player safety. But you're going to have some hard data for that. And we'll see. Look, we'll see it. Maybe we all love it. Like, maybe this becomes this play that, when everybody's trying it, maybe we do enjoy it. I don't happen to, but maybe others will. This is all opinion stuff. I'm fascinated, though, by the vote, how the vote played out, how close the vote was.
Were you surprised, by the way, about any of the teams that were the ones that voted against it?
No, I don't think so. Obviously, the NFC East needs to vote to ban it.
Voting to keep it. Like, are you surprised by it? The 10 teams that voted to keep it around. Obviously, the Eagles were one of them. But then you had the Ravens, the Browns, the Lions, the Jags, Dolphins, Patriots, Saints, Jets, and Titans. Those were the teams that, according to Adam Schefter, at least, that voted against banning it.
This of that list, the Saints are the one that would stand out to me because they don't have the quarterback type personnel to run it. The Lions are a little interesting, but remember, the Lions have the best offensive line in the game. No offense to the Eagles. So they're probably with Dan Campbell working on something.
Well, and Dan Campbell goes for it all the time anyway. So anything even if they don't do the tush push necessarily, to at least have that in their back pocket.
They will.
As a play to be able to try to convert, because Dan Campbell's going to roll the dice all the time.
They'll be running that play this year. Like, count on it. I don't know who will run. I don't think it'll be Jared Goff, but they're going to run that play. I'll bet you this, every team that was on that list is working on a way to run that play. The Saints are the one where, like, who the Saints is going to run that play? Maybe Alvin Kamara can. I don't know. you know, can running backs take snaps? Like, there are ways to do it. Jalen Hurts, like the Eagles, I don't like the Eagles. The Eagles deserve, I mean, as much credit as you can be given, they deserve it for this because they have created an unstoppable play. And that is insanely awesome for them. I don't think it's insanely good for the league, but it's great for them. And they deserve all the credit in the world for it. They do. They deserve all the credit in the world for what they've done on that roster anyway. Like, I never thought I liked Jalen Hurts. I like his vibe coming out of college. I love his story and how he went and left Alabama. I love all of that. Never thought he was going to be a Super Bowl type quarterback in the NFL. He's been to two of them now. Nick Sirianni, like, as much as anybody might want to see that guy fail, he's been to two Super Bowls, and outside of a, you know, late season collapse last year, like, they've done nothing but win since he's been there. Their GM, well documented with the work he's done on the roster. Their owner, who was talking all the trash yesterday, since he's taken over that team, there haven't really been any more successful teams than he has with what he's done. So, like, yeah, they deserve all that credit. I don't want to take anything away from the Eagles and all of this, and I'm glad and I hope they continue to wear this like a badge of honor because they've earned it and they deserve it. And it's good. That is good for the league. That makes it fun. That has nothing to do with it. I just don't want to see every team start running this play well in 2 years, and then we don't have third and ones anymore. Be exciting.
Yeah, I also love the quote from the Steelers owner, Art Rooney, after the vote happened. He said,
an honest answer, you go to old Art.
Right, and yeah. I really like what he said. He goes, I don't think it's the end of the world that it's not banned. I was for the ban, but even if we pass the ban, we're still going to have quarterback sneaks in the game. I think more was made out of it than it was. Really, it wasn't as big a deal as we made out of it. Which I do agree with that. I think that this has been like really, really like illuminated and a spotlight on it, when really, in my opinion, it's not that big of a deal. I think too much has been made out of it. And you know what? Look, like, had it been banned, I whatever. Like, you move on, you move forward. But I think a lot of these owners were probably like, and even Jerry Jones, I think, said this to an extent that, you know, it made him think about it. Like, is it really that big of a deal? And ultimately, they voted in favor of banning it. The Cowboys did. But at the end of the day, I think that most owners were like, you know what? Look, like, this isn't that big of a deal, guys.
I agree. I totally agree. I don't care that much. It just was, it became this headline. I think because you had a little like drama element to it with like spite and all of these things, I think that probably made us a little more interested. The tush push alone individually isn't going to win the Eagles a Super Bowl or lose the Chiefs a Super Bowl. It's one piece of it. Like, it's not, it isn't. I totally agree with that. Like, it's not that big a deal. It just became really interesting as the process went on. And now the Eagles, as they're going to milk this appropriately, it will become this fun thing next year that we're watching. It for sure will. Like, it's fine. Royals, Tommy, winners yesterday, I should say. 8-4 over the Giants. You love the 8 runs. You love that they backed up a bullpen game. We got the answer, you know, pretty quick that it would just be a bullpen game with Daniel Lynch. We kind of wondered, and it was never really official if he'd be available to pitch more than a regular appearance, but he wasn't. And that tells you pretty clearly that what's going to happen. He'll go right back to the bullpen, and they expect short stays, I would think, from Reagans and from Lugo. So all of that's good, but there's no question. And you can go right back to the show yesterday. What the best thing to come out of yesterday's game was, and that's Salvador Perez, not only going 3-for-5, which was great, but getting his first home run in more than a calendar month since April 13th. If all of a sudden he turns it around and like finds it and finds his groove, we will look at this game, the final game on May 21st in San Francisco Day Baseball, as this pivotal, monumentous moment of the Royals season. Now, that could also very easily not happen, and this could be a one-off. But if it does, I mean, that's the kind of impact that is going to have, I think, on this team. getting his bat back in this lineup in the middle of it to be able to produce runs will be that impactful. It could be a turning point of this season if that can be the spot.
They've got to get him right, you know, and the game yesterday, a really good spot for that. It's a good way to start. I texted you early in the game when I think he was 0 for 1 to start things off, and then he had a single, and I texted you, and I was like, Salvi got a hit. Like, that's all I wanted to see was, like, can he even get a single? And he did, and it was a good at-bat, and he was able to work a single out of it. And then he follows it up with a home run and adds RBIs and all of that, which is fantastic. I think that is extremely important. And the fact that he went 3 for 5, so it wasn't a one-off. It wasn't like he went 1 for 5 and that one hit was a home run. Like, he was able to get on base a handful of times. He raised his batting average by 8 points in one game, which is huge, you know, and got his OPS up over 600 again. It's still far away from where the Royals need their cleanup hitter to be, but it is a really good start, and it's just going to be – it's something we've talked about multiple times, whether we're talking about it from an individual point of view with a single player or collectively as an entire group. We've got to see the consistency. So it's good to see the one-off. You know, they scored 8 runs collectively. That's great. Now we need to see them follow it up with another good offensive outing, because that's been the issue. They've put up a bunch of runs in games, and then they follow it up with a stretch of games where they don't score at all. So we need to see this, you know, happen a few times in a row to start to feel like, okay, this team is back, or even individually, Salvi is back.
And it also, to me, wasn't a he got turned on an inside fat. Like, it was an opposite field, kind of vintage Salvador Perez home run that he was able to muscle out, wasn't the best pitch to even, like, but he... you know, that's where he's at his best, right? Because he swings at a lot of pitches. And so, like, all of it, you like, you see it and you're like, oh boy, that felt like old Salvi. Like, that looked like an old Salvi home run where you're like, oh man, swung at a bad pitch. Maybe it's a fly ball. And then it's an opposite field home run. And you're like, whoa, he's strong, right? Like, that's so all of that felt really good. He just, and I listened to him after the game, Joel, just his real quick interview on the field with Joel Goldberg, and like his head seems right. You know, the things he's saying and the things that Goldberg, who does such a great job, who's with the team every day, is saying to him about, you know, maintaining that captain status and getting it. And Salvi, like, part of the reason we all love him so much is because he's always having so much fun doing this thing that he's so fortunate to do. And he never seems to take it for granted. And so, like, that attitude too, I think, was good to see. Like, he seems okay in the head. We don't know if he's okay physically. We've wondered about that, right? He's not. He's just not. And he did, yesterday, he looked like Salvi. Like, he looked for the first time in a very long time. It's been weeks since we've seen him kind of seem locked in at the plate, and he was yesterday. And this was all, by the way, against Logan Webb. And it also came after they started the game with 3 straight singles, got a run, and then had 3 straight strikeouts. Like, that, I was just like there is not a better microcosm of this season for the Royals than 3 straight singles, a couple runners on with nobody out, and getting 1 run out of it. Like, and that's how they started the game. And then, of course, they opened it up and things look great. Michael Garcia continues to hit at an insane pace. Bobby Witt Jr. is doing his thing, although we're still waiting for his power to pick back up. I suppose the easy, very simple glass half full is, you know, there's more power coming from Bobby Witt Jr. Like, that is a for sure thing. We're pretty sure there is from Salvi, because it's been like non-existent. Vinny's never going to be a power guy, but he's at least hitting the ball a little harder. Like, those are your glass half full moments, but they've got to continue it. What was the, and I don't have it in front of me, like, we dug some numbers. This was the last week, probably. The amount of times they've scored more than 4 runs 2 games in a row this year is like 3 or 4. It's a stupid small number. It just is very tiny number of times they've been able to go back-to-back games. And one of them was against Colorado, if you even want to count that, with as bad as they are. So now it's like, okay, that's great. We've seen these one-off offensive performances, and then it's Lucy with the football. We'll have 4 more games where they scored combined 4 runs. Now they've got to follow it up. It's almost like I don't want the day off today, right? Like, you don't want the day off to even think about it. Just like, find that groove. But that's the next thing now. can you do it consistently just for 4 or 5 games? Can you get hot for a week? They haven't been able to do any of that.
Well, and from an independent performance perspective, I mean, we talked about Salvi, but I mean, also Michael Massey was 3 for 5. That was good to see.
He did look good yesterday.
You know, Mikel Garcia was in the leadoff spot and Jonathan India got the day off. Garcia was 2 for 4 with 2 RBIs. And then, of course, Bobby Witt Jr. is 2 for 4. You and I were talking back and forth yesterday also about Witt batting after Garcia and what that might look like with the lineup and all of that. And I know it was a one-off because India got the day off. But, I mean, it certainly, I think it helped Bobby Witt Jr. batting directly behind Mikel Garcia and your two guys that have the highest batting averages on the team going back-to-back at 1 and 2. And I don't know, I don't think it's probably the right thing to do permanently to have India not bat leadoff, but at least for one game when you needed to kind of spell India to have Garcia be the leadoff guy.
So here's, I text you, I was like, man, what if Bobby Witt Jr. was, because ideally, I would still maintain that the ideal spot for Bobby Witt Jr. is as a leadoff hitter, lets you better utilize his speed, which is the best in the game. But then 3-hole would make a lot of sense. If Garcia, if this holds for Garcia, I think whether you bat him 1 or 2, I would probably bat him 1 because India is, if nothing else, you trust him at the plate to get a job done, right? Probably even still a little more than Garcia. Garcia just is a hits machine right now. But Garcia is also really fast. So stealing bases comes back into play. And like, if Garcia is going to hit like this and his on-base percentage is right now, yeah, 377, I believe it's the highest on the team. You could put him, I would say 1, India 2, let India move him around, do whatever you're going to do. And then you've got Bobby Witt Jr. there to try to drive him in rather than Vinny Pasquantino trying to drive him in immediately. And then you could bat Pasquantino 5th. I think there could be, now, I think the chances of that are not likely. We asked the question 1,000 times. Well, why don't they just lead off Bobby Witt Jr. last year? JJ Piccolo himself told us because he doesn't want to. And so there's probably, I would say, a very outside, small, slim to none chance that that happens. So then the other, you know, the other possible outcome there is back Garcia 3rd. Right. Let just flip it around a little bit. Just back Garcia 3rd. It does limit your base running a little bit if India gets on and you've got those other two guys that you'd like to be able to run free. But I think that's an alternative that would be OK. But yeah, Bobby Witt Jr. in the 3-hole with this lineup this year could be something to think about.
It's interesting to me that, you know, you've got a guy that, and we don't talk about him a ton, and he doesn't get all the at-bats. He doesn't play every day. He plays a majority of the games, but not every day. And that's Kyle Isbell, who has batted pretty well in his time.
He's done a really good job.
You know, on the roster, he's got a 286 batting average. His OPS is, you know, 736. I mean, he's been a solid contributor offensively. He's pretty locked into that 9-hole, which I think is really, it's interesting to me. And I don't think I don't think it's a bad place for him.
No.
But he's been kind of under the radar, at least offensively, as we focused on players that are not getting the job done and where you could move the lineup around. I think if you had to, I wouldn't be opposed to moving him up in the lineup. I don't think they're going to. I think he's pretty much solidified in the 9-hole to turn that lineup card over and to, you know, get things going again. But if you had to, if you needed to go somebody in the 6-hole or 7 spot, like I would be okay with that. It's just interesting that we haven't really focused on him and his contributions, and he's been really good.
I think I agree, but I'd leave him there. I think what he's bringing defensively, like you're just ecstatic over the moon right now if you're the Royals. I don't think but he does kind of like one thing only, and that's get a single, right? Like that's pretty much all he's getting, which is great. Like it's fine out of your 9-hole spot. I'm good leaving him there. That's also kind of like there's a track record here. Like if there's a law of averages, kind of don't mess with that one if it's working. I'm not sure I would put him in the same stratosphere offensively as other guys that you'd be more comfortable moving around.
I mean, you know, you mentioned he does one thing and that's hit singles, but at the same time, out of basically all the everyday players on the roster, he's got the 3rd highest slugging percentage behind Bobby Witt Jr. and Mikel Garcia.
That's because all of them only hit singles right now, right? Like that's been one of the problems of the offense. I just don't think like if we look to like, okay, what, I don't think Isbell's going to be the guy that's going to give them that pop. Here's the other crazy part. So Massey's there. India is kind of that spot, but and Canna, Waters and Isbell have been a fine outfield. So as we look at it and we see for mean catch yesterday, the most obvious solve for this team is for Cags to continue to develop and give them power, Jack Caglione. If that happens, it's going to have to be because Salvi catches a lot. I wonder if we don't see Freddie Fermin catch a little more often now so that Salvi is saved for when they ult, because if they're going to wait until June or July to make that call up, or maybe even later, if you're making that call up and he's not going to play the outfield, which doesn't appear like he is, that means you're going to want Salvi to catch every day. And if you're going to, or play DH and, well, no, he'd have to catch every day.
He'd have to catch, and then you'd have to have.
So if that happens, save it, right? Like if you know you're going to try, if you know coming down the stretch of this season and into the postseason, Salvi's going to have to catch, let Freddie Fermin play more now. Right. And maybe Salvi gets a day off during every week and all these things once that time comes. But that's another thing I think as we're looking at it that we could watch. It's going to be a minute for Cags has to hit AAA pitching. They obviously want to see him do that before they do anything. So that's one that comes further down the road, certainly. But it was the only time, Tommy, they've had four runs or more, three games in a row. One time it's the Rockies series was a big part of that. So
it's a huge series starting tomorrow against Minnesota. So if they need it, if there's a time to back it up, now's the time.
I love it. Yeah, I love baseball so much. I'm so glad that the Royals are good again and have been good now for the last 2 years. All right, we're coming back. Another hour of Sports Daily. Don't go away.